Okay, welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the I Love Real Estate Success Story Show. This is Michael here from Knowledge Source. And today we have another story that we are going to share with you from another I Love Real Estate student. Now, each week we always try to do these and give a little bit of an insight into what have other students done within the I Love Real Estate community that is a little bit different, a little bit unique. What have they done to go out and actually change their life? And as a consequence of that, end up flowing on and helping others as well. And today we have another, a fantastic story. I have known of this gentleman for a number of years now, and every now and then we've caught up, and it's been really insightful and really inspiring in such a different way to any other student that I've interacted with. So I'm really pretty excited about this. So I'd like you to welcome to the I Love Real Estate Success Story Show, Ryan. Hey, Ryan, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, good, man. Good. Hey, look, thank you so much for taking out the time to spend today. Really, really appreciate it, because I know that you've done some really interesting things, and I'm really excited to kind of share exactly what you've done, especially with everyone else here.
Yeah.
Hey, so to get a bit of an idea, when we first have a look at everyone, like you came from a very different background. Like anyone who comes into the Isle of Real Estate community, can you give us a bit of an insight into, you know, how you started? Because you started, you know, getting into property at a very young age, which was very, very different to actually anyone else I've heard of.
Yeah. I was quite not as young as I wanted to be. I sort of, for many years, was sort of saying to mum and dad, I want to buy a house, and they just kept telling me, no, you don't understand the costs involved, you're too young, you know, it's not something that you should be doing at your age. So, you know, probably 2 or 3 years of that happened before I bit the bullet and went behind their back and did the opposite of what they were telling me, and bought my first property without them knowing.
So you went behind their back to buy your first property after them telling them no.
So I just, after 2 or 3 years, I'm like, nah, I'm gonna go and do it. So I'd been through that time, because originally I needed them as guarantor, and I just kept going back to the bank and saying, how much deposit do I need, what do I need to do it without a guarantor, and use that time to save like crazy and get in.
Do they look at you differently now?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I think at the start they were really worried and a bit surprised and like, oh, why didn't you tell us? And I'm like, because you wouldn't let me. So, and then when I kept going and they started to see the millions of dollars in debt that I was at that sort of in my 20s, they're probably a bit concerned, where was I going with this? But I think then later on they started to see everything unfold, and they were, I think, very, very proud but surprised as well.
Awesome. And just look, from where you're coming from, you were very kind of enthused and kind of keen to get into property. What was it like? There's a bit of a motivation that came behind that.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little about that?
So just as a young kid, you know, we all hear the stories from our grandparents and our parents, you know. My grandparents, they're like, oh, you know, because I used to love lollies, and they were like, you know, when I was a kid, the bag of lollies was like 2 pennies or 2 pence or whatever it was. And then my father would talk about when he was a kid, and he'd be like, oh, it's 5 cents, and the bag would be full, you know, of lollies. And I used to be thinking in my head, geez, when I go to the milk bar, you know, it costs me 50 cents or a dollar to get a bag of lollies that size. So, you know, what I later learned in life was inflation, I guess, was what I was identifying then as a kid, that these bag of lollies are just going up and up in price. So I just in my head always thought, well, I need to get the biggest bag of lollies I can, or what's the most expensive thing in life? And obviously it's a house. So I just had it in my head, well, I need to get as many houses as I can, because if everything's going up, he'd do the bag of lollies every year, then, you know, the houses would be the same. So that's sort of my one of my core drivers, I guess, from a young age, was just seeing those stories that were passed down to me generation to generation, and going, okay, well, and then doing due diligence and looking at house prices over the history and going, yeah, well, it makes sense. I just need to get as many as I can. So, yeah, that's where it came from.
Oh, I love that. A bag of lollies. You just wanted the biggest bag of lollies, and the biggest bag of lollies was a house.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So, so obviously you got into property at an earlier age than most. And then what was it that brought you to the community? Because obviously you've kind of going through life and you managed to get obviously into the real estate market. Yes. What was it? Yeah. Why did you enter the Isle of Real Estate community?
So it was about 8 years ago now. And I had at that time was at about my eighth property. And as I say, quite a few million in debt. And I just thought, shit, I better go and learn something about this property. You know, I know that I should be buying them, but I don't really have any education around what I'm just, you know, going along doing this. Maybe I should go and invest some money into myself and just, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And I think if you go along thinking that you know everything or everything's good without being open to that there could be another way, I don't think that's a good thing. So I just thought, no, I'll go. This was one of the many courses that I went into and around that era, around that time. And, yeah, I think it was a thing that was, I look back now and was well worth doing.
Interesting. So that was just like you'd got eight big bags of lollies that you've got. You're running off that kind of that viewpoint, and it's like, no, let's get serious and let's get educated on it. So yeah. Okay, cool. So like how did things kind of change for you? Like obviously, you know, you're diving in and did you go straight along to a boot camp and
Yeah, very quickly. I went to the 3 day, back then it was 3 day boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
And met a lot of awesome people, had a lot of fun, just information packed every day. And I came out of that even more determined and more passionate about property. And in that same week after that, I signed a contract for another deal. If anything, that boot camp, it booted me more into having even more drive and more passion for, but it also had taught me and really opened up, you know, my eyes to a few things as well.
Boot camp tends to do that, doesn't it? Because it's just so jam-packed.
Yes, yeah. A lot of information.
And out of interest, how did, because you've done a lot of courses, that was a time when you were just obviously really improving and educating yourself. How did the Isle of Real Estate program and DIPNA stack up against others? You mentioned a little bit. Can you just expand on that? Because you've obviously done a number of training programs.
I did, yeah. So I didn't have a lot of education around property. I didn't really have any education. I was dropped out of high school at a very young age and got into the workforce. So for me, all this information and courses was like fairly new, you know. I hadn't done a lot of that type of thing. So a lot of the other courses I found were very in one direction, or you know, they were teaching you stuff, but then at the end trying to sell you something. And I still took things away from each of those. But what I liked most about Dimfner's course was that you know, they weren't trying to sell you anything at the end. And it was very diverse. So you really got taught a wealth of information, and then really was up to you what area you wanted to go down further with, or what type of property deals most interested you to do. And I liked that diversity, and that there was a lot of option there. So, yeah, that's probably a big thing.
Good to hear. And so you, with that as well, with diversity, you looked at other strategies?
Yes. Yep. So I had been doing the same thing for those eight properties prior. I'd just been basically doing the same thing, and they were all residential and two rooming houses. And I had never ventured out of Victoria, and I'd never ventured into sort of commercial type space. So after doing that, I was straight online and looking in other states. It was like this whole new world had opened up to me, because I'd only ever been searching in Victoria. And so now I was searching the whole of Australia, and also commercial things. And I sort of put together some information I took from another course, that was sort of teaching us about some particular areas in New South Wales that were going to be up and coming. And I agreed with all the stats and that doing the due diligence, the agents in the area were saying, oh, there's no tenants, it's a saturated market. So, and then with what I'd learned from Dimpner's course, I sort of put that commercial spin on it and looked outside the box. And instead of just walking away from it, I'm like, no, how do I get into this area but make sure that it's cash flow positive, and that I'm not going to be without a tenant, just hoping that over time the capital growth will occur. And so I put all that together and purchased a car park with a 5-year lease plus options up in New South Wales. So that for me was the first step out of predominantly residential things. Yeah.
That's really fascinating. And I've got to say, I love that. I love that kind of viewpoint of the fact that, you know, you can see an area, you've done your due diligence to know it's going to go up, but there isn't an opportunity for positive cash flow.
Yeah.
So then how can you make it work? And then suddenly you've done your research and come up with a totally different deal you've never done before, commercial.
Yes.
And gone, yep, this is going to work. Yeah. And is there another interesting story you want to share about how this kind of was when it came from a financing point of view as well?
Yeah, so I had pre-approval for almost twice the price of that property. But when I went back to the bank, and I'd already signed the contract, and I went back to the bank and they said, oh, no, this is commercial. Your pre-approval is for residential. You know, we can't do that. So I might have jumped the gun a bit there. And so I had to go start approaching other banks, and it led me to another bank and sitting down with a bank manager there and explaining what it was and everything, and showing him the deal and trying to get someone over the line to give me the loan for it. And he saw the deal and saw the property, and you know, after the last bank I was thinking, oh, you know, I might have stuffed up here. And he looked up at me, like, because he was silent, he was just reading over everything and the contract and looking at the lease agreement and everything. And he looked up at me and he said, look, I don't know where you found this deal, but if you find another one, can I give you my card? And he said, so he was really impressed. And he did the loan and everything, and it was really good. And as I was, not only did it do very well, but it was quite highly positively geared for all that period that I owned that property as well.
Such what an interesting experience to sit down with a finance person and think, oh, I'm not too sure if this is going to work.
Yeah.
And you get that response. It's like, hey, here's my card. If you find another deal, let me know.
And he was awesome, man. He rang me. I remember a few months later, he rang me to see if I'd come across anything. He was serious. He obviously hadn't seen anything like it. So, but yeah.
And this was the first one that you did straight after boot camp.
Yeah. So Dimpfner, I think she always says, "I'll guarantee you your course money back if you don't make back the money within however long or whatever." Well, that's what she used to offer. And yeah, basically. Made it back very quickly. So because I would never have looked interstate or in that sphere if I hadn't have sort of gone to that boot camp and expanded my mind from where it was at, you know.
Yeah, awesome. Fantastic, Ryan. Now what if you have a look at all the training, like Dimpfner does, you know, she offers so much. Is there one part of the training that's like, you know, that was really key for you?
Probably, I guess what I'm saying is that direction and having, you know, where I was quite narrow and just repeating the same thing, really opening up your mind and allowing that your direction can go in different ways than it had before, really opens up a lot more opportunity for deals. So I think from the training, that was a big thing, is really broadening what I was able to do in property or what was possible, rather than just repeating the same thing that I had been doing.
Yeah. And was that from the boot camp? Was it the boot camp that gave you that?
Yeah, it was the 3-day boot camp. And I think prior to that, she'd asked that we watch some DVDs, which may have been of another boot camp as well. So, and I'd spent basically another weekend prior watching all those as well. So I knew a little bit of what to expect, but when you're actually there, it's obviously a lot more exciting and easier to take in than when you're just sitting at home watching the DVD.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, awesome. It's interesting. Did you, like, out of interest, did you, like, have, or it seems like the mindset aspect wasn't really an issue for you because you were committed, like, from the get-go. You know, as soon as you could get into property, there wasn't, you know, it's like that really wasn't a stop for you. Is that, would that be correct?
Yeah. So it was more, I've always been a big believer, it doesn't matter all the knowledge that you have, you need to be able to take action as well, you know. And I think another thing is that I was moving along on this course. In turn, not the course with Dimpfner, but doing what I had been doing, and I was still working, and I'd done a lot of business courses and things too. And I remember, you know, at one course I said, you know, you're always going to be working unless you're making money while you sleep, and things like that, you know. And so I was just looking at everything and going, well, yeah, I've got 8 properties, but I'm still working, you know, like there's got to be a faster way. And I mean, it was still pretty quick, I guess, in the scheme of life and everything, but I've always been very driven and I wanted to do more quicker. So, and I guess the only way to do that, they always say, if you keep doing the same thing, you'll get the same result. So I thought I'd go and educate myself a bit more and maybe can apply that and do it a bit differently and then maybe get a different result.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, you clearly been doing that, hey?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, so can we just break down some of the features of some of your deals?
Yes.
So just to clarify, that the first deal you did was a car park in New South Wales.
This is after doing the course?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah. So that was the first one. I think that was straight after boot camp.
Yes.
How does that stack up? How did that stack up from a profit and dollars side of things?
So it was about a 12.5% ROI, which was extremely good. Basically, it meant that the company leasing it almost paid off the entire property over the time that I had it. So I sold that recently in December, just gone, because I was going to. So basically, the lease finished, they'd taken out another option. What was that, for 3 or 4 years? Because it was almost 8 years all up.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they gave me notice that's it. They weren't renewing any more options, which I was aware of. That was always the plan, was to get land in that area, lease it some way, and then later on when it's worth more, build on it. So yep. I basically was looking to build on it, did the designs, got quotes, everything, and ready to pull the trigger and sign with the builder. And then obviously with COVID and everything, they were sort of saying, oh, we can't start till next April, or we can't, you know, and there's prices are going up. And so I just started ringing a few agents and doing a bit of due diligence about, and when they heard that I had a block of land there, they're like, there's no blocks of land here. It's all sold. And I'm like, oh, what price are we sort of talking, you know? And sort of looked at the prices they were telling me, and I'm like, looking at what it would cost to build and then what that would sell for, and I'm like, I'm going to make more money here if I just sell it as a block of land than actually do the build, and I'm not going to have to waste. And so, yeah, in the end, we put it on the market, and it, the first three offers came in over the range that the real estate had listed it for. And
wow.
And we and that was the following day after it got listed, and we basically took the highest offer, and it's basically from when we listed it to when we signed the contract, it was 24 or 48 hours, and then a 30-day settlement, and it was, yeah, even better than. And I remember saying to the agent, if you can get that price, I'll list it, because that's going to make me more money than if I build, you know. And they got it. So I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, wow. So basically, I think, you know, what's a lot of people say, there's a rule of thumb, properties double every 10 years. Well, this, if I had kept it till the 10th year, you could say it would have tripled in price. So,
wow.
And not to mention that it was positively geared from day one. So basically, when that settled, yeah, as I said, there was about $50,000 owing on the loan. The rest was all paid off from all the income going into the loan.
So all that 12.5% return on investment went back into the mortgage to pay it off.
Yeah.
Pushed it down. We were just holding it, yeah. And then when it came to sell, it's almost three times the value you purchased it for, and there's only $50,000 left in the mortgage.
Yeah.
Awesome. And that was deal number one. Oh yeah, well, deal in, we know, within the community. Yeah. I can understand how that financier is probably going, hey, can you give me another one of these?
I was on holidays in Queensland, and I drove up there recently, and I thought, you know what, I'm gonna stop by and just take a look at that property, because I'd never seen it. I did all the calculations online, and it all stacked up, and I'd never seen it. I'd saw a photo of it when I bought it, and I never seen it. And I thought, now that I've sold it, I should maybe go and look at it before they build it. So that was the first time I'd seen it after I sold it.
Wow, wow. So you had it like, what, 7.5 years?
Yeah.
But I suppose we should say here as well is that obviously Dimna doesn't recommend you purchase sight unseen.
Yes.
But the difference here is Ryan is not going into this firsthand. You'd already purchased 8 properties. You know, you already had a portfolio. You already knew and had a good understanding from a due diligence point of view, yeah?
Yeah, and I do purchase sight unseen quite often, but only for particular deals. It's specific deals that I'll do that. And it's not everyone. So, yeah, for anyone, I wouldn't recommend it to someone, but as you say, experience and particular deals, for me that works, but it's not something that I'd probably recommend to people unless they really know what they're doing.
Awesome Wow. Okay, cool. So fantastic deal. What's the second one? I think this is you're doing a bit of a PPR deal.
Yes, so that was a basically purchase of a property and then a subdivision and a build. So it was sort of renovating the front house, which I lived in while I was doing that, and getting the plans and permits to do a build. It was a corner block.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then I did an owner build for that, and basically built the new house and then moved into that. And that I financed myself and did the build and everything. And that was a really, I really, really thoroughly enjoyed doing that project and just liaising with all the trades and everything. And it was a really, we actually had a party after we, after at the end of it, once it all got completed and got the new title and certificate of occupancy, actually had a party with all the trades to bring their family and their kids in to see what they had been working on over the past year.
Oh, nice, yeah.
I remember the real and the real estate agent and the broker and everyone that, that I, because later on I took it to a bank and got a loan on it. And, yeah, they were like, oh, we've never done this before. And I think I just did like a two-hour slot for the party because I'm like, oh, they're all busy, they're all working. And, you know, I think we were still going like 4 or 5 hours later. Everyone was still there having drinks and everything. It was really good. I thoroughly enjoy, and you know, you hear people say, oh, it was a nightmare, I'll never build again. But I think if you really, you know, go through and you have everything lined up and documented of how you're going to do it and everything planned out, it can be a really good thing. I really enjoy that.
So nice to hear that, and like, what a lovely thing to do as well, because it's like, you know, the time and effort to go and build a house and then to celebrate afterwards. Yeah.
And that the figures really stacked up and did quite well on that too. So
how do they stack up? Because what did you bought in at, was it about 540?
Yeah, I bought in at 540, and the total cost to build plus doing all the subdivision and the renos on the front house was 600.
Mm-hmm.
So that's you're at about 1.14.
Yep.
And then the valuation after I finished was 770 on the original home and 890 on the new home. So back then was a combined total of 1.66. So it's just over 500 grand equity profit. But that was, as I say, that was going back, that's probably about 4 or 5 years now. So both those homes are well over the $1 million mark now, which is because obviously held on to them. So, you know, if you redid those calcs now, it's a lot more, even back
then.
Wow. Good.
Awesome. So you've probably had what, about 500k uplift when you do it back then, and you probably added maybe another, you know, 4, possibly even 5 as well.
Yeah, and I think the key to that one was I picked a really good suburb and market timing, really a bit of luck, I think, as well. So it was that really worked in my favor as well.
Because was there something to do with the timing before you settled as well?
Yeah, the for the original house, so I obviously had got a loan on that one, and the bank rang me just before or on settlement to congratulate me. But he said, "Oh, I just want to congratulate you." He said, "I've never really seen a house that," he said, "if you look at the value of the property now from when you signed the contract," he said, "just what you've made from, you know, and we've only just today settled." He said, "That's like outstanding, you know." So he was really impressed and congratulated me on that. And that was exciting to know you've already had a bit of a win before you've even started. So,
Got a bit of uplift before you've even settled.
Yeah. So,
awesome. Now, I don't know what everyone else is thinking, but there's some pretty fascinating deals here, and we've got a few more to go too, yeah?
I haven't told you all my deals, but yeah, there's a few I mentioned to you. So yeah.
All right. Now, what about another one? I think there's you've got another story about a text that occurred late at night.
Yes. Well, it was actually a colleague of mine had sent me an email that he received from a real estate agency. They were obviously doing a big mail out, and he sent it to me and said, "Oh, maybe you'll be interested in this." And it just said, you know, Lang Warren's cheapest unit, 3-bedroom, you know. And wasn't really much more detail. So I sent an SMS to this agent at about, I don't know, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And I couldn't believe I got an SMS straight back, like within 5 minutes, saying, "Oh, can, you know, if you're interested, can we meet you at the property tomorrow?" You didn't really give me much more info. So I'm like, "Oh, okay," you know. And so yeah, went down the next day and met with them and had a look through. And they said, "Look, you know, the owner and the, you know, the parents had signed guarantor for their children or a couple that had purchased somewhere, and they were selling this house, but the new house had gone into contract past finance, but this house fell through the sale, so they were in a bit of a sticky spot, and then they resold this house, and then that fell through as well." So they were now under pressure from the person that they'd purchased off that they needed to settle by the next extension date or else they were going to court. And I sort of felt for them because, you know, I could understand how you end up in that. And not only are they in that scenario, but now their parents are, you know, potentially going to lose as well. So I said to the agent, "Look, I'm keen, but it's not really a property I would normally look at. Like, it's just a 3-bedroom. It was gorgeous, you know. It was all like new, you know. There's nothing wrong. But I didn't see any potential to develop or renovate or do anything." And she was like, "Look, they need to settle within, you know, 30 days. And I said, "Oh, well, you've got to take out weekends and things." I said, "It's probably only about 22 days. And I said, I don't see how they're going to get anyone, can get even get a loan in that time, you know. And so I said, "Look, I could settle this, you know, like I could do cash and just buy it. But I said, it's not really going to help me, like, you know, if I want to help them, but it needs to help me in some way too." And she said, "Oh, look, we've got buyers that will sign a contract for that amount and they're ready to buy, but they need 30 days minimum, you know, or they need 40 days or whatever. So you could buy it and then we could sell it, you know." And I'm like, "Oh, it's not going to work because by the time I pay capital gain and stamp duty and all those things." So I said, "Look, let me come back to you tomorrow. I'll just do some calcs." And I went back to them the next day and said, "Look, this is the price I can offer, because then it's positively geared for me as an investment. And that," I said, "just keep it as a backup offer, you know, if they can't get it over the line with anyone else." And she's like, "Oh, you don't understand, you know, that's the price. You can't offer lower, like that's already," like, I said, "Oh, I can see 2-bedroom units have sold for more than that price. So I know it's a low price, but I'm just saying, if I'm going to help them out, I need it to help me as well. And that's the price that I can offer." So anyway, I think they tried and were unsuccessful to get anyone over the line. So they basically took my offer and they, on settlement, because I think the agent and the owner and everyone was just fingers crossed that it was going to go through. And look, I can't get a loan that quick, so it's going to be cash that will go through. And they rang me on the day of settlement and just thanking me, saying, you don't believe how much of a pickle that you got them out of. And, you know, they were really, you know, lose a lot if it had gone. So they probably weren't happy with the price they got, but at least it meant that then they didn't lose their deposit and their parents didn't lose their house. So, yeah, it was a bit of a win-win from that perspective, I think.
Yeah. And this deal came about purely because obviously you've already been investing, you've got the cash at hand to be able to do so. But do you think that a deal like that comes to you out of the blue, or is it something when you're in alignment and things like that come your way?
Both. So I think I've got quite a large number of people that are around me, agents and brokers and colleagues that know I'm into property. And so they're always sort of throwing things your way. But you've really got to be, and when you say in alignment, you know, it's funny because most of my deals, it's more in alignment of wanting to help people. Because I didn't really, you know, I was there looking at this beautiful property, but the only reason I was trying to go that next step was like, how can I help these people out of this situation? Knowing that there's probably not many other people that would be able to. So I think that's where the alignment comes, just always being open to being able to help people. But it should be mutually beneficial to some degree, I think, if it's a business thing like this. On that one, on settlement, we got it revalued. It was just over 100,000. The valuation was just over 100,000 more than what I'd paid for it. So it was a very good deal. But as I say, I mean, they stood to lose a lot more than that had things gone the other way.
So you obviously you got a nice bit of uplift, helped them out. They kind of got out of their sticky situation. Yeah. And so they benefited, you benefited, and then you've got this property that you didn't really want or need, but you were happy to do it because it gave you a bit of a benefit back.
Yeah. And one of my ex-partner's parents needed somewhere and were looking and liked it, and they're in there renting it from me now. So it's helped them as well. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah. In many ways. And so how did that stack up? Like, is that you? Do you still have that property now? And
yeah, so it's positively geared, and it just got valued by NAB for 660, and I purchased it, it was about 342. So, and that was probably 4 years ago or something. Yeah, so it's, you know, that's pretty good considering I haven't done anything to the property. It is a really nice property. Yeah.
So it's all it looks like it's almost getting close to double in about 4 years.
Yeah.
So, awesome.
Yeah,
that's
a good one.
Nice one, Ryan. Nice one. Okay, look, I don't know how everyone else is thinking, but there's some pretty interesting stuff here. And I really love how you're actually looking at it from the viewpoint of alignment from this help scenario as well. And I want to expand on that maybe a little bit later. You got it yourself into the commercial side of things as well. Did you want to share another? Have you got a commercial deal that you're happy to share?
Yeah. So one of the ones I did would have been back in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Was a large commercial. I had gone to VCAT with the council for plans and permits for 2 four-bedroom homes on a block that I own, and got that over the line and everything, and was having trouble trying to get the banks to come to the party for that. And I sort of said to the broker, well, what are they, you know, what are they wanting to come to the party with? Because they're not wanting to do much there. And he said, look, they really got an appetite for commercial at the moment. I said, okay, well, maybe I'll start looking in that area. So I found this developer that had not quite finished a development, and they were sort of selling one of the factory/warehouse offices that were completed, I believe, so that they could fund the completion of the other ones. And the site was sort of, in a bit of a mess, and I could see things weren't good for this guy. It looked like, you know, they owed a lot of the trades money and things. So I said to the agent, you know, we went and looked at it, and I said, look, I'll buy the whole site because I want to control the body corporate. He goes, no, only one's for sale. I said, that's cool. Put me in a room with the owner and the developer. And he said, no, we don't do that. We've just got one site. I said, well, I'm not going to buy one. I want to buy the whole site. So either you'll put me in a room with him or I'm not interested. And so I got my meeting with him in a room and they were sort of talking about what the whole site would cost. And it was large, you know, it was a lot of money. And they were sort of asking me how was I proposing to cover, you know, trying to get an idea, what's this young guy, is he really can afford all this? And I said, well, no, I don't. He sort of turned to me, the agent, and he said, oh, I don't actually know why we're here. It sounds like you're wasting our time because I don't think you've actually got the money to do this deal. And I said, no, I don't, but I've got property, you know, I've got unencumbered property. And I said, you know, you want to sell and I want to buy. And I said, well, I was thinking maybe I'll give you a title as a deposit. You know, I've got a property there that's 17,000. That's a good deposit, you know. And he's like, oh, that's crazy. That's ridiculous. And that owner said, oh, hang on. I like it. He's thinking outside the box. And I said, well, it's not possible. I mean, you sign a contract. You just say, well, I'm giving you, you know. So, and the owner made a few calls and obviously to his lawyer or whatever, and he came back and he's like, yeah, I'll do it. You know, we'll sign the contract and everything. And then, yeah, that night he must have spoke to his wife and she was not happy. So they wanted to change a few things. So I had to put that property on the market and sell it because I didn't want to go ahead with taking the property as the deposit. I ended up selling that privately for the exact same amount that I told him it was worth, and had the plans and permits with it for the new owners. And then that gave me the deposit to keep that still happening. So it was a very interesting one that I think the broker and the real estate agent and the conveyancer and probably the owner all could not fathom how I got it over the line and did it. But in the end,
we did. Wow. Ryan, I've got to say that there's so many creative aspects to this, you know, which I love. Because the first of all, you were having trouble getting finance for the build for a residential property. And then you went to the finance and said, well, if I can't get it for the residential, what are they looking at? So from that piece of information of saying, oh, they're looking at commercial, you then started to look at commercial.
Yeah.
And then trying all these different ways to get it. And then you're using that residential property that you couldn't get finance for the build to roll it over into commercial.
Yeah.
Right. And trying different ways of doing it, going against what everyone says. Yeah. Really, really interesting. So how did it stack up then? Like, you know, did.
Yeah, so it was it was a good problem. Because I said to the agent, because he was, you know, the agent's job is to push the price up. And I said, look, I know that no one's buying in this space at the moment. Because I said, the last time an agent picked me up and drove me around to all these listings was back in the 90s. Like, it was a long time ago, you know. So I said it was not, it's not, I know it's no one buying in this space, in this high price range. So, it was basically the entire site was 2.2 million. Obviously, I've had to spend money finishing it and stuff. And part of that happened through the contract phase because the bank needed the occupancy certificates and things to happen. So it was a very interesting, drawn out process, but we got it there in the end. But down the road, on the same street, the recently sold smaller singular factories, so not an entire site of them, just singular factories, for around that 2.1, 2.2 million, just each, and they weren't brand new, they're like refurbished. So right now, you know, and that was, I purchased in 2019. So you're going to be talking close to you know, doubling in that period. But I think, again, buying at the right time in the market when everything was down, and you only have to look in the all the articles in the papers at the moment that are saying that, you know, the commercial areas in like Mulgrave and Oakley and Moorabbin over the last 2 years have gone up 50 to 60%. So, and in my research, I had estimated over the next 10 years that those areas would do very well. Mm-hmm. I never had ever thought that it would happen in three. You know, what I expected to happen in 10, did not ever expect it would happen in three. So,
right, awesome. So there's what about one and a half, maybe almost 1.8 million profit in?
Not in profit, because as I did have to put money into finishing it.
Yep.
In that commercial space, there's a lot of fees involved in terms of the valuation, and to get that over the line, I had to go to second tier lending. The loan, the loan application fee was, I think, about $22,000, and valuation fee was about $4,800. So, and there were a lot of other costs as well. But you got to do what you got to do. And some people look at it and go, you know, there was a lot of other costs that you would not expect that's required in that space. When you hit a second tier lender, those prices go, I have to pay all the legal fees, everything. So there could be 60 to 100 grand there. But I knew the deal stacked up over the long term. So you're mm-hmm. sort of like, well, it's going to cost me that, but long term, I'm going to make that back. So
yeah,
does eat a little bit of that profit too. So
awesome.
Yeah, overall still very, very happy with it.
Great to hear. Hey, there's one thing I wanted to kind of elaborate, and I mean, that's just, it's a phenomenal kind of deal. And this is something that you've kind of ventured into, obviously. Yep. I Love Real Estate has helped you get into this whole commercial side of things as well. But there's something that I want you to, if you can, just to expand a little bit on, and that is that when you look at a deal and when you look at the tenants in your deals, you have a real interesting viewpoint on how to help them out.
Yeah.
Can you share a little bit about that? Because I just, you know, when you first told me about this, I'm like, I'd love you to share it if you can.
If I go back right to the start of my property journey, it was because, and they were two basically almost what you might call rooming houses. It's because a few of my friends were living in little shacks with furniture that they got off hard rubbish on the weekends. And I just thought there's got to be a better way for them. And I sort of got a few of them to meet each other, different friends that were in, and said, look, you know, if I bought a place, a nice place, and furnished it with stuff that's not off the hard rubbish, you know, like, would you guys be interested in living together? You know, like, because, you know, it would be a lot. And then you can start saving for your deposit for your own place. So I sort of, that's how the first couple of properties came about it. And I did that you know, it worked very well. And then the next one, it was a mate of mine. He was studying here, and then his family were moving out to the country, and he hadn't finished studying. And he's like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I don't have any rental references. And I said, oh, I could buy a place. There's a place I've been looking at. It's really run down, but if you don't care, I could just renovate it while you live there, you know. And he's like, oh, I'll do anything. I just need somewhere in Melbourne. And so that's how the next one came. And it was always with this view of, you know, that will get their rent down, they'll have a nicer lifestyle. But what happened for many of them is they just ended up spending more on luxury things, you know, for their car or whatever it was. So a couple of them did save and did things, but it expanded from there. And then I started, people got to know that I had rooms for rent, and they'd ring and they'd be like, do you have anywhere? And it eventually got to the point where, you know, to one friend rang and said, oh, my dad needs to sell. He's just lost his job. I know you're into property interest. I said, oh, yeah, I'll buy it. What's the price? And so we did that deal, and she was really, really, people, you know, that when they're really grateful, that gratitude really hits you, you know, and it's like, I want to do that again. Like, it's just not only you're doing something to help someone out, but it just, I think it sits with you, and it's a really nice thing. And then I had another tenant in another unit that gave notice, and I'm like, oh, look, you don't have to answer, but can you tell me why you're leaving? You've been a really good tenant. And she was like, oh, I need to move closer to my family, you know. And I said, oh, have you got somewhere yet? And she's like, no, I'm really struggling trying to find a rental. And I said, well, all right, how about stop looking at rentals and start looking to buy? And she's like, oh, I can't buy. And I said, no, you find something similar and I'll buy it. And then you just stay here until it's settled, and then you can move in there, and then I'll get a new tenant for you. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah. And so then you already know you've got a good tenant, because they've already been a tenant for 3 or 4 years. So why would you want to get rid of them? And so just doing that, you know, again, and then they're so grateful that even they just take care of that property, because they know that the whole purpose of getting it was for them. So it just seems to have been a thing that has kept happening. And I've heard of, oh, this tenant or this person is looking here, and I'm like, okay, if I can get something and make it work for that price, will it work? And another tenant that I've got sort of is someone that I am sort of taking care of. His family don't really do a lot with him, and same thing, I sort of found the property that I thought would suit and did that. So it's just, I don't know, it's a really, but it's, you're helping people, but at the same time you're helping yourself, because it's growing that portfolio. So yeah, it is a, I don't know, just somehow, maybe like you said before, it's an alignment that maybe I'm in, and it just kept happening. It's the universe, it's not really me or them, I think.
Yeah, I've got to say, look, Ryan, I love the fact that you approach it that way, that you're looking after the tenants the way you'd look after a friend or a family member to help them out, and it's coming across, you know, directly as a win-win. You know, there's a benefit on both sides. That's just it's such a positive vibe, you know. Yeah. No. So I can understand why you probably don't have so many issues at all with your tenants.
They're all long, like you have the odd one, as I say, and I've had to go to VCAT, I remember, with one couple, and they actually sent me an apology letter after I evicted them, like to just say sorry for putting me in that position. And but my, you know, people want dog doors or security screens or whatever. Yeah, I would want that. And if you, like, I know now that everyone's allowed to have pets anyway, but back then it wasn't the case. So it's like I would always do it, because I thought, you know, they know that they'll struggle anywhere else because they've got a pet. So if you're allowing them and you're putting in a dog door or a cat flap or whatever, it's like a home. Like, people got to get out of this mentality of, yeah, it is a business and it's an investment, but these are people's lives, and the rentals that we're providing these people, that's their life, that's their home for that period that they're in there. And if you can really make them feel like that's their home, well, why, they're not going to want to leave. And I tell you that over 22 years or however long I've been doing it, most of my tenants, a lot of them are probably still original tenants. I have very, very low turnover, it's made it very easy, you know.
Oh, fantastic, Ryan. Yeah, and look, thank you for sharing that as well. It's something that I've always, you know, when you first told me about it, I'm like, I love this approach. Yeah. So just from where we're at now, is there anything that you kind of have had? It seems like everything tends to go your way mostly in a positive way. Have you got anything that kind of didn't kind of flow the way it would? Like, I think there was, you had some finance issues.
Yeah, I think like a few times, you know, the banks have, seen your portfolio size and considered you to be a bit of a risk, or, and they give you some, the excuses that I've been told sometimes. So I remember one bank manager saying, look, we don't normally tell people, but I'm going to let you know. He said, you passed with flying colours, you ticked all the boxes, but they're just uncomfortable with the size of your portfolio, and that's why you didn't get over the line, you know. Or, you know, one the other day, I mentioned to you, you know, they said, oh, look, you know, if there's a war and all your homes were bombed, you know, because this is only recently after the war, if all your homes were bombed, then we don't see how you'd pay all those loans, you know, just so you get told something. But that's part of what you need to navigate. And I think, you know, as I said earlier, sort of opening your mind and just being able to go, okay, well, I don't take that as a no. I take that as, okay, I need a different approach. And as, like with the commercial property, well, it's a no for that type mm-hmm. of thing, but it doesn't mean it's a no for everything. So you're just navigating that and finding what is the bank's appetite in that given time period, or that particular bank, because they can be different as well.
Fascinating. Some of those excuses and some of that info. Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, how do you, because you've done a number of joint ventures, haven't you?
Yes.
How do you approach that? Because, you know, for everyone that knows, you know, Dipner has another, you know, there's a JV checklist on the members only website. There's also a video there about due diligence before entering into a joint venture and so forth. So how do you approach your JVs, and to what extent do you check out someone before you enter into a JV agreement?
Yes, I'll look at whatever they provide, but I'll always do my own feasibility to see if it compares to theirs or stacks up. And I think what's important is seeing if you're a match with that person's personality, because you're going to be spending a lot of time on the phone, video chat, or having coffee with them if they're in the same state, whatever. And you know, not every two personalities are a match. So, you know, that I think is really important. And you know, speaking to other people that know them or may have done JVs with them or seen their references. So, but all the ones I've done have been, you know, awesome people that I've met in the community there, and they've gone really well. A couple of them have probably taken a bit longer than expected, but I always expect that in any project anyway. You know, I always, if someone tells you, whether it be a JV partner or a builder or a tradesperson, I always in my head add a bit more to whatever they're saying. So it's, but it's, yeah, for me, it's been a really good experience. But that's what I would say, is don't just go off what people tell you. You need to have done your own checks as well.
Yeah, no, for sure, absolutely, and that's just a reflection of exactly what Dimpler says as well. So, awesome. So Ryan, how is your life different to when before you started?
I'm eating a lot more cake now.
Yeah,
the lollies. Now I'm retired. So whereas before I was working. And, you know, I had all these properties, but I was still working. So I've changed the methods and changed things so that I'm not, I own businesses and things like that, but I don't have active roles in them. But I can go in and help out the staff or meet clients or go out for coffee. I can still go and do a project here or there. So you have the choice to do, you know, when I wake up each morning, you know, I go to gym and I then choose what I want to go and do, rather than, you know, where I was before, where it's like, yeah, I've got all these properties, but I need to go and work as well, you know. So I think that's probably the main difference.
So with your free time, what do you do then? I mean, like, you know, are you like...
Yeah, I do. I'm a sweet tooth, so I do love going to fancy restaurants, and I normally try and chat my friends if the, you know, different restaurants or find places with good cocktails or whatever. And I go on a lot of holidays. I think we've been trying to tee up this for a while, and every time you've messaged me, I've been away somewhere.
Now, just to let you know, this is true. We have been communicating. Hey, where are you? I'm on holiday here, holiday in Queensland and away and stuff. So, yeah.
If it wasn't for COVID, I would be overseas. It's just, I think, you know, my father passed away at Christmas time, and one of the big takings from that was really enjoyable. You know, he was still working. And he didn't have to be, but he. So I think it's really important that you enjoy your life, because, you know, we do all this, but if you don't ever get to enjoy it, you want to. There's two things there. You want to really get to enjoy your life, but you want to enjoy the journey. If you're doing this property or your work or whatever, and you're not enjoying that, probably not, you're not doing the right thing. You somehow find a way to make sure that journey is really enjoyable as well. And I love having lunch with my staff, you know, or as I say, tradies, if you're doing a development, we would sit on the concrete slab there, and, you know, I'd go and buy them whatever it would be, burgers or palmers or whatever. And we'd all sit in a circle in the, you know, on the concrete slab, and you've got all the pipes sticking out of the door, and just really enjoying. You're going to enjoy that journey and that process. And I think, to me, that's something that is really important.
Mate, so nice to hear. So nice to hear. And, like, there's one other thing that I wanted to see if you wanted to share, and that was with your company, and you've got companies and businesses, you treat your staff a little bit differently because you're involved with property as well, don't you?
Yeah, like one of the first things. So a normal company will have meetings every so often. So there's an element of our meetings that we talk about the staff's goals. Because, you know, I think they're working hard to try and help the company, but what about them? You know, something should be happening for them. So often I talk to them about getting into property and as early as I can. And I remember, for example, one of my youngest staff moved here from the country. Like, oh, I'm never going to afford a property in Melbourne. I'm like, yeah, you will. I'll show you how. And he's like, nah, can't afford that. And sort of just showing them the process. And he got into that years ago, you know, and now he's looking for his second one. And he's like, so I think that's a really, I think the staff really value that, you know, to at the time they're a bit unsure and it's a bit scary, but you sort of say, no, I'm telling you this is what you need to be doing. And later on they look back and they're like, wow, you know. And so it really, I think it's good because they're helping the business, but the business is also helping them. So it's a win-win again.
Yeah. You seem to be doing that in every aspect, don't you? Yeah. This win-win.
Yeah, I think then everyone's happy, you know. I retired, but I still go into my businesses because the staff just make me happy. I just, like, they're awesome. They're awesome people. And the tenants. Like, I remember sometimes I'd go to doing, because I was managing a lot of my properties for the first half of the journey. And honestly, I would go in to do a rental and say, and they will have made me bacon and eggs and mushrooms and everything, like, for breakfast. They're like, oh, you're coming. Like, wow. Like, what? It's just a really awesome thing, you know? And because we're all just people at the end. We're all just people, and I think that's important, you know. Really.
Totally. So nice to hear, man. So nice to hear. So what do you tell others about the community and the training, Dipnus training? What do you, do you recommend it? And what would you say?
Yeah, so in as I said, I do a bit of property management type things, and often we refer people into to Gibson as the only, that's the only course that I've, out of all the ones I've done, I think hers is the best and the best value for money. You gotta be careful. There's a lot out there that are a bit of a scam, you know. And so I think, and it's the most diverse. And I think if COVID taught people anything, especially business owners, diversity is key, you know. Don't have all your eggs in one basket, unless it's Easter eggs and the basket's coming to me, then that's okay. But I think it's just, it's the diversity is really important, because the things and the what she teaches in all aspects really, as I mentioned before, allows people to choose what they feel in alignment with and what they think they will enjoy, and then they can go further down that path. Because it's no, I just don't think it's a good idea for someone to go, I'm going to choose this path, but I really am not going to enjoy it, because I think that might make more money. I don't agree with that. So I think there's so much there that is in her course that people will find something that they can connect and align with and feel comfortable to go down that path and do.
Ryan, mate, thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time out from your go out to restaurants and catching up with friends and doing all what you're doing. And I really appreciate it. And I know that the approach that you have, just love your approach and how you look at this help flow between yourself, your tenants, other people, everyone that you're, you know, when you're doing deals and so forth. Really love that aspect. And it clearly has worked well for you. And such an inspiration and really insightful as well. So thank you for taking the time out.
No, thank you. It's always enjoyable chatting with you.
It's been good. It's been, I'm glad we're finally caught up too after a cover of, you know, toing and froing.
Yep. When we next catch up, I want to see that Michael's plan.
Okay, yeah, I got it. See, look, you're doing that flow as well. Awesome. Yeah. Okay, excellent. Well, look, that's it for today. What a great story. Now, just to let everybody know, this recording will stay onto the Ultimate Facebook page. You can review it there. We also do the edited version. It goes up on the members only website, so you can check it out there. The other thing as well is that we are doing these regularly to be able to give a little bit of an insight, a little bit of inspiration, and really give you some encouragement to say, you know what, get out there and do something yourself. Whatever it is, whatever you can do, get out there and do that. And lean on these whenever you have the opportunity. So all the best, do well. Once again, Ryan, thank you so much. We will end off there and we will catch up and we will see you either at the next live event or online somewhere. Okay. See you now. Bye.